in some Hasidic Shekelas, they have a minhag that during kinnas they throw beans. I don't know if anyone's heard of this or ever seen it. I've seen it. And there's a story in which took place in Liadi. Reb Shlomo Kalina was going to visit the Balatanya in Liadi, and he was there for the summer, and he was there over Tisha B'Av. And the story goes that during kinnas, there was a famous chassid called Reb Shmuel Munkus, who, while people were involved in the kinnas and they were saying the kinnas, he was throwing beans at them. So obviously, throwing beans at chassidim, some of the beans are going to get stuck in their beards and their shirts, and it made some of the people chuckle and maybe not. Is it recording yet? It made some of the people chuckle, and Reb Shlomo Kalina, who never seen this before, was taken aback. He was quite upset. So after kinnas, he goes to the Alter Rebbe, and he tells him, he says, "I don't understand what's going on over here. One of your chassidim was throwing beans during kinnas, and people seemed to be laughing, and I was absolutely mortified. How you talking? It's Tisha B'Av." So the Rebbe said to him, "I hear your question. So this afternoon I want to go for a little walk with you. I want to talk to you a little bit about Tisha B'Av." So that afternoon, he takes Reb Shlomo Kalina for a walk. And they're discussing the day, they're discussing it about Tisha B'Av, about the Churban, about Binyan Beis HaMikdash. And while they're walking, they hear these mournful cries. And they hear someone crying alone in the woods. And they can hear clearly this crying about the Churban. And Reb Shlomo Kalina turns to the Alter Rebbe and he says to him, he says, "Wow. It's because of people like this the Beis HaMikdash is going to be rebuilt. People who are mamash crying this way, the Bimus Abel Yerushalayim, it's through this the Binyan Beis HaMikdash will happen." And the Alter Rebbe turns to him and says, "That person who you're listening to now is none other than Reb Shmuel Munkus. He's the person who's thrown the beans this morning in shul." And somehow there's this interesting balance. On the one hand, you had this person throwing beans at people in shul because they're crying, yet he himself is one that's sitting in the forest and crying. How do these two things work together? It seems to be a complete contradiction. It seems to be he's trying to make some sort of balance, which doesn't seem to make any sense. So I'd like to share, based on a famous medrash brought by Teres Chatos, I'd like to share what I think is perhaps pshat in the story, and also will explain Avodah Sayon. So the Ramah in Teres Chatos brings a fascinating medrash, which I'm pretty certain we've quoted in previous years. I think it's quite a famous medrash. It's talking about by the Churban, and it's shortly after Nebuchadnezzar had issued the command for the Beis HaMikdash to be destroyed, and there's Taka, the Churvus now of Yerushalayim, there's the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash, and there's literally the stones on the floor. And the Medrash says that when Nebuchadnezzar went on this mission to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, apparently Plato, the famous philosopher, joined, and he was part of the mission. And he sees the Navi Yirmiyahu sitting by the ruins. And he sees the Navi crying, he sees tears streaming down his face. And he says to him, he says, "Are you the Yirmiyahu HaNavi who I've heard about? The person who's famed throughout the land of Israel and also beyond for your wisdom?" He says, "Yeah, that's me. I am Yirmiyahu." He says, "I don't understand." He says, "I've got two questions to ask you." He says, "Number one," he said, "where I come from, wisdom means people who can think rationally. People who can understand the world." He said, "You're sitting here crying like a baby. And it's clearly just over sticks and stones. Number one, why are you sad? If you're a rational thinker, who I assumed you were, having heard all these reports about your brilliance, why are you crying? Where's the emotion coming from?" That's number one. And number two, even if you're going to tell me there's a reason to cry, there is emotions that's going to be stirred from a building having been destroyed. But again, a rational man, what's the purpose in the crying? I understand you may feel pain, but a rational person will be able to move through that pain and realize there's no purpose in it. So the second question is, why are you crying? Question one is, what the feelings you're having, and question two, what's the purpose in allowing them to come to tears? So the Medrash continues that Yirmiyahu turns to Plato and says, the same way that Plato says to him, I've heard your Yirmiyahu and I've heard about your brilliance, Yirmiyahu turns to Plato and says, well, I've heard about you, Plato, and I've heard you're a tremendous philosopher. So I'm sure you have, as a philosopher, I'm sure you have many, many questions about the world. He says, indeed, I have many questions about the world. Many I've answered, but many I'm still toying over. So Yirmiyahu says, please, let me hear your questions. And the Medrash goes on to say, it doesn't say what the questions were, the Medrash goes on to say that Plato then goes to Yirmiyahu and he asks him question after question after question. And Yirmiyahu sits with him and patiently works through all of them, giving answers that Plato himself is satisfied with. And Yirmiyahu then says to Plato, he says, you want to know why I'm crying? You want to know the hurt that I have from these sticks and stones? He says, it's from the building that was here that allowed me the inspiration to this wisdom. It was the building that was here that with the spirituality that it's left us with, I was able to have the inspiration to come up with all these answers because it gave us a direct connection with God. So that's why I have feelings of such pain, because these aren't just sticks and stones. They may be physically sticks and stones, but they actually represent a whole lot more. What went on in this building, you wouldn't even be able to understand. That answers your first question. Regarding your second question of, even if there's a reason to feel the emotion, as I've just explained to you, but you want to know what's the purpose in the tears, that you just won't understand. And with that, the Medrash ends. The Medrash ends with that Yirmiyahu tells Plato he can answer him question one, of why he should have such emotion, but he can't answer him question two because he won't understand what the purpose is in the tears. Reb Eli Lapkin quotes the Reb Simcha Zilsel of Kelm, the Alter of Kelm, that there was an answer. But an answer that Plato, being someone who's a Greek philosopher, would not be able to understand or accept. Because the answer is beyond rationale of a human intellect. It's beyond. You see, Plato, a Greek philosopher, was brilliant, absolutely brilliant person. But he only believed in that which could be perceived through the five senses. Only with that which was rational, with that which the brain could get its head round, using the tools that we have in this world. He couldn't see beyond this. There's something which Chazal say, which is Chachma Bagoyim Tamin, Torah Bagoyim Al Tamin, which roughly means that we can accept Chachma from Goyim. Explanations of what and how things work, we can accept that, and we should accept it. It's Chachma. Chachma is Koyachma. What is the strength? What is in front of us? How does it work? And these are tools. These allow us to navigate the world. But Torah b'goyim al tamin. Torah is beyond. Torah is the why. Zohar Simcha Zisl The crying of Yirmiyahu wasn't a crying over spilt milk. It was a crying because being misabel Yerushalayim is what builds the next base of Mikdash. It's what brings the next Gula. Chazal tell us, Kol misabel al Yerushalayim zoicha v'roya b'simchasa. Somehow, anyone who's misabel Yerushalayim, who thinks about what we're missing, who thinks about what Kodesh Baruch Hu is missing, who thinks about what the world is missing through the lack of a base of Mikdash, that itself, that being misabel, that feeling the pain, having the emotion, that itself allows a person to be zoicha v'roya b'simchasa. That itself allows that the base image can be rebuilt. That is not something that can be explained rationally. We can try, and we will. But ultimately, that's something which is Torah. That's something which is beyond the five senses. And it's something that we, who Baruch Hashem, we're maminim, b'nei maminim, we can accept. But Plato, even with all his brilliance, will not be able to accept such a thing. So it comes out that on Tisha B'av morning, we're not just sitting around in order to feel pain for the sake of feeling pain. It comes out that we're supposed to be feeling sadness, being mis'abel, and trying to tap into the Churban, but for a purpose. It's not being depressed and hopeless for the sake of it. It's because there is hope. It's because through sitting here, we have an avodas hayoyim of trying to tap into it, and through that we're going to be rebuilding. This is what this chassid, Reb Shmuel Munkus, was trying to do. This is what he's trying to do. Sitting here is not to feel depressed. That's not the idea. We have an avoid sayyom today. Depression is a lack of hope and purpose. We're feeling sad today. We're being misabled today for the sake of a purpose. It's an avoida. Avoida means we're doing something in order for something else to happen. And that's what we're trying to do today. We're trying to tap in, to feel, to have hope as well, but really be able to feel the Churban on the level that we're able to. There's a vart from the Gerer Rebbe where he says, Chazal say that even after the Churban, when other gates of Tefillah were closed, B'shari demo is lo yinalu. He said the gates of tears were never closed. Gates of tears are never closed. That means the tears of a person will always be able to make their way up to the Kisei Kavod, and that will always be accepted. And he asked, if it's taka true that the gates of tears are never closed, he asked the Kishmak Akasha, if the gates are never closed, then why have the gates in the first place? It's a good question. The Chayra, gates are there in order to be closed. Sometimes yes, sometimes not. If they're always open, what's the point of gates? So he answered, he said, because there's two different types of tears. He says there's sincere tears and there's insincere tears. He then said, for sincere tears, they're never closed. For insincere tears, that's not considered to be demise. But it goes a little bit further as well, that the gematria of bechi, of weeping, which is what we're supposed to be doing on Tisha B'av, is also the same gematria as lev, heart. I think the understanding behind this is that even if we're not able to bring ourselves to tears on Tisha B'av morning, but we can still achieve bechi, we can still achieve true demise through us feeling the Churban. Everyone on their level, being misabel to try and feel, even though it's difficult. It's been a long time since the Churban, and we know, as we discussed in previous years, we've discussed how we can't deny, and we'll be makitot HaKadosh Baruch Hu every day, that we live in far better times than any of our ancestors did in Eastern Europe, wherever else they lived. There's no question about it that even with the anti-Semitism that's going on in the world at the moment, we have to continue to be makitov that we are in a much better position than any of our great-great-grandparents were. But that just makes it more difficult for us to feel the mourning of the day. But we need to try and tap into it somewhat. We also need to know that it's very, very difficult for us to fully understand what we're missing. We talk about the nissim that occurred every day in the Beis HaMikdash, and the inspiration that people had when they went to the Beis HaMikdash, and how the Navi described how all the inspiration which led to all of his Chachma was all from the Beis HaMikdash. We can't really fully understand that. We can try, but part of our Churban is understanding that we don't fully understand. In fact, I heard a moshel to bring out this point. I found it very powerful. I don't know if it's a story which ever happened, but it's definitely a good moshel. That I heard this from Y.Y. Jacobson, Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson. He said there was a shnora when he was in yeshiva in Lubavitch in 770, and his name was Teddy, and he was a very diligent shnora, and he used to make the rounds, and everyone knew him. Then one day, someone found him buying a lottery ticket, because there was a big lottery that day, and he asked him, the person that saw him, asked him, What are you going to do with $300 million? So he answered back. He said, if I have $300 million, I'll hire bodyguards around me, and I'll put security guards around every single door around 770 so that I can be the only shnora. It's a very, very, very powerful moshel. We can think of Geula. We can talk about Geula, but our vocabulary is still limited to a Geulas mindset. So we have to realize that's part of the Golos. That's part of the Al-Eilani Bechir. And I'll be honest with you, I feel it every year when I sit down on Tisha B'Av afternoon, on Erev Tisha B'Av afternoon, I sit down on the floor with my bagel and my egg, and I sit down and the lights are dimmed and I'm on the floor. And I'm thinking, really? Do I really feel it? We've got to realize that itself should allow us to be Musabel. That itself, that we don't really fully get it, is part of the Churban. And we've got to continue, we've got to remind ourselves that also Al-Eilani Bechir, that times will be much better. How much better? We can talk, we can try, but ultimately, we don't fully get it, we don't fully understand it. So, we're going to be going through various kinnas, Be'ez Hashem, together with Rabbi Shai Lister and Rabbi Asher Richman. We're going to be starting off with Kinna Yud Aleph, which is described as a Kinna Yud Aleph. Those that have the Ox Scroll, it's page 182. Kinna Yud Aleph. So it's written in Divrei Yomim that this is a Kinna that we must always say. While we're in Churban, it's a Kinna that we always need to say. It's talking about how Yirmiyahu lamented over Yoshiyahu. So go through the story. The story is that Yoshiyahu, the Melech, was really the original Makarev. He had the first Shuva movement. Yeshua was someone who really came from nothing. He had a father and a grandfather who both seems to be, the way they were described, seemed to be Rishoyim. Although his great-grandfather was Chizkiyahu HaMelech. And in fact, Chizkiyahu said that he didn't want to have any children because he was told that if he has a child, his son will become a Rasha. The Gemara describes how he was told that because he decided not to have any children, he was going to die young. And ultimately he decided, okay, he'll have children. He survived, very famous Gemara, but ultimately that child was Menashe, who led Klal Yisrael astray, and his son Amnon was just as bad. And ultimately, when Yoshiyahu HaMelech becomes a king at a very young age, he's left with Eretz Yisrael full of Avodah Zarah. What was it that leads Yeshiyahu to be chayzer b'teshuv himself? So the psukim describe that it's a melachim base. It describes that there was one particular sefer Torah that had been hidden for a century, and when it was opened up, then it was opened up to the Teichacha, describing all the atrocities that could occur to Klal Yisrael, and it describes the king's role in responsibility for the downfall of Klal Yisrael. And Yeshua takes it as a personal mission statement that it's his responsibility to try and fix Klal Yisrael and to bring them back to Shuvah. And it was very successful. Very successful. The Kinnah even describes how he sends round basically some sort of police system he had that went around to different people's houses to check if they had Avodah Zarah in their houses. Because it was before he came along, it was riddled with Avodah Zarah. But he managed to get rid of a lot of it. But unfortunately, he wasn't successful completely. And the Kinnah describes how there were people who basically hid Avodah Zarah from these police. It describes how on the double doors, similar to the double doors there was double doors, as the police would come in, then on the double doors, there was Avodah Zarah on either side. So when they came in and they opened it, then the police weren't able to see it. Basically, the Medrash is alluding to various different ways in as to how the people who were still over the Avodah Zarah, how it was they were able to hide it. However, because it was hidden, Yeshua did not realize this. And as far as Yeshua was concerned, he felt he had eradicated Eretz Yisrael completely from Avodah Zarah, which unfortunately led him to a grave mistake, which unfortunately led to his death, which is what the Kinnah is describing. Because what happened is Mitzrayim were going to war against Ashur, against Assyria, and the most effective way to go through from Mitzrayim to Ashur, if you look at the map, it's through Eretz Yisrael. And Paray asked Yeshiyahu, these are the two kings, he asked him whether they could have a passage through Eretz Yisrael to have this war with Ashur. And Yeshiyahu said no. He said no. And he explains that the reason why he's saying no was because the Pasuk describes in Vayikra that Cherev Lisav Baratzachem, that when the Klal Yisrael are doing Rotzon Hashem, then there won't be any sword that will pass through your land. And he understood that what this meant was, is that when Klal Yisrael are all doing Rotzon Hashem, then even those carrying swords on the way to a war won't be able to pass through Eretz Yisrael. That even if the war is not taking place in Eretz Yisrael, Cherev Lisav Baratzachem means nothing would even pass through. And therefore he felt that this would be the right conclusion. They shouldn't allow, he shouldn't allow Mitzrayim to come through, and even if they insist on it, he can't have it. When the Navi, Yirmiyahu, finds out about this, then Yirmiyahu sends him a message saying that this is the incorrect Pesach. Klal Yisrael are not there yet. However, Yeshua doesn't want to take no for an answer. He decides he's going to get a second opinion. He decides he's going to consult with Chulda Nevi'ah. He asks Chulda Nevi'ah, and she says exactly the same conclusion. She says, Klal Yisrael are not there yet. She says to him, you're being overexcited, overzealous maybe even, and the correct thing is to let them through. That is the correct thing this time. However, Yeshua perseveres, and he gives his command that no, Mitzrayim will not come through. And even though Mitzrayim says, we're going to come through even if you don't like it, he says, we're going to fight back. We're not going to allow you through. And ultimately, as the Kinnah describes, Yeshua himself gets killed in this battle. And the Kinnah describes, in Sadi, it describes how Tzadadu v'samuhu k'matar l'chitzim. They trapped him, and they made him a target for the arrows of Yizuku boy shleish meyes chitzim. And they shot 300 arrows at him. And the Kinnah describes how on his last words, it's the Gemara as well, and the Kinnah describes how on his last words, he whispers, Tzadik Hashem can receive fuel. He says, Hashem is Tzadik, and I disobeyed HaKadosh Baruch Hu's command through the Navi. The Navi told me not, and I went ahead, and I still did it. And we're told in Divrei Hayomim that we're supposed to be saying this always. We're supposed to be saying this. This is supposed to be a Kinnah L'doros. And the question is, what is the message? What is a message that can be taken from this Kinnah that we're told it's supposed to be said L'doros? There's many messages, but I want to focus just on one idea potentially. And that is, our security depends on Shemiras Torah Mitzvahs. It's very clear. Our security depends on one thing. And that is Klal Yisrael doing that which is correct. And ultimately, that is what we need to be looking towards. When Klal Yisrael are all Shemir Torah Mitzvahs, that's the day when we'll have a Mala Aretz Deyas Hashem, when the rest of the world will follow suit. But it first needs to be Klal Yisrael. And as long as it's a situation where unfortunately most of Klal Yisrael are not Shemir Torah Mitzvahs, where unfortunately most of Klal Yisrael don't associate themselves at all with the words of the Torah. They look at the Torah as a joke book. They look at Tanakh at best as an interesting story, but nothing, as far as they're concerned, that reflects reality. Then we realize that we are not where we're supposed to be. The statistics, you can check these things up. Statistically, Klal Yisrael should be a lot bigger than we are. A lot bigger. The numbers are so small because of assimilation. That means there are millions and millions of Jews around the world who aren't even aware they're Jewish. This is a churban. And yes, we live in a time where we have liberty, religious liberty, economic liberty, and it's something which, again, as I mentioned beforehand, our great-great-grandparents would have wished for. But what it is, it's come at a cost. It's come at a tremendous cost. There was, at the time of the Enlightenment, when I think it was Napoleon, wanted to basically liberate us from ghettos and for us to have equal rights. There were many, many Gedolim at the time who said, this is not something we want. It's not something we want, because they saw the writing on the wall. They saw if this happens, It's true, we may have rights and life may be easier, but it'll lead to assimilation. So the message of this kinah is that we as Klal Yisrael, Baruch Hashem, we're steiging. There's a long, long way to go. And we have to realize that we have responsibility to other Jews that are not affiliated as well. We've got to constantly realize that we are being stared at by them. And they want to see if we taka are an example. We're supposed to be Mamlechas Koinim V'Goy Kodesh. We have to go out of our way to make sure that we're looked at in such a way. Because that's really the only way that we can make this influence. The message of Yeshayahu is the job's not done until it's complete. We cannot be lax. We cannot think that because Baruch Hashem we have an army in Eretz Yisrael, that therefore everything is going to work out perfectly. As long as Klal Yisrael are not following Ratzon Hashem, we're not there yet. So the message is L'doros, and the message is very relevant today, that we have to realize in order to have security, in order for us to feel Eretz Yisrael will remain ours, and we're going to see the next steps, we need more and more people following Ratzon Hashem. So let's read together Kina Yud Aleph. Ve'ikoinin Yirmiyahu al-Yeshiyahu Eicha elikoinu me'ilav Ben shmoyne shana heichel idrish me'lihav B'neicham ba'avram chanu alav Lo'i hezka lo'i segui mifalav Gam b'chol malchi Yisrael Shakamadu ligdor Lo'i kam kamayu mimois avigdor Dovak b'chit litzoni hador Shakamu achar hadales istor Ha'ich limzera shichor Kismoy hatoif b'chamoy mishchor Bigdal avayim ve'ishiv yomin afayir Ba'ayr toy shalach yadoy b'nachoyir Zaka morov kanom tas al hakim Bitsa emrosoi barur asher lo yakim Shachoshach toroi kinatsu rechukim Bevetsa miyasi das rechukim Toi vimroim nukru v'shofu malach Mani balach hayom lesalach Yidei amaret tamim b'malach Tionesh b'vitsias b'nifilach Kilo hamoinai leches aram narayim Laman leisavar cherev kol shu efraim V'loi shama lechayze lasho v'achirayim Gezeira Nigzer, the Sachsich, Mitzrayim, Mitzrayim, Mechatis, the Siras Mosais, Chazoin, Ansoi, Siyachil, Lavazais, Noah, Nomim, Lufumoi, Lavazais, Place, Panovas of Lazais, Suroid, Valoisia, Bayamonusoir, Suramot, Yusoid, Nishia, Penekarov, Kakareb, like also Lyritia, Bayra, Moyan, Rachisia, Idenuitim, Inobigabinifim, Hit Achachit, Moyrim, Lechatim. Tzaduhu b'samuk matar lachitzim Bizkuvoi shloish meizchitzim Kalim hitu achrov ezim oitzafiyu V'amitzoy nevesh ma'asav hifiyu Rach savasov hitzami piyu Tzadiku adinoik mri isifiyu Sisi noif kikinizam Leshaleim shoinam v'avoyim bitzom Tam kesav atayim azubububub zamzubububasham Bekin love Kalecha Yuam, Tom Bimikrechot, Kais Mikidilish Dois, Moich Natash Mitok, Goha Kayla Sois, Tala Bessimish Time, Arisha Sois, Kisafur Laecha Bessimish Time, Isis, Isis Kinois, Lubotam Achili, Eiski Shachati Machili, Zamoisi Kilad Yahili, Rashati Banasati, Mutash Ahani. Okay, the next kina is kina tes zayin, kina 16. And the kina starts off zechayr shetz osa tzar b'fnim sholaf char b'bolifnai b'lifnim. It talks about how Titus think of the right word. Titus treated the Beis HaMikdash not just as chulin, not with the appropriate respect, but he literally went the opposite way. He describes how he stabbed the Beis HaMikdash in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It describes how he took a zayna into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and he came out unscathed. And we know, on the other hand, that Nadav and Avihu, they went in there and they even tried to do what they were supposed to do, and yet they died. And the contrast is glaring. That somehow Titus goes in, comes out unscathed, Nadav and Avihu go in and they treat it with respect and they die. And it's being said as a kinah that there's this contrast. But there's a strong lesson here as well, and that is that when the Beis HaMikdash is treated with the Kedusha, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu reciprocates with giving it the Kedusha, and therefore it's got its potential. When it's not treated with that Kedusha, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't reciprocate, and therefore the Kedusha goes. And of course, when we read the Kinnah, we need to read it in its Pashto lesson, and that is what we're missing, that there isn't this Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash anymore. But there's also a lesson for us regarding the Kedusha that what we are supposed to give to our Mikdash Ma'at. A few weeks ago, I was by the cave of the Tosfos Yom Tov, and we know that the Tosfos Yom Tov, one of the things he's most famous for, besides for his Pirush LaTorah and all his contributions in the Torah, was for that which he attributed the Gezeiras Tachfatat to people not being mechabed the Beis HaMedrash properly, not being mechabed the Beis HaKnesses properly. And he spoke about how people would talk during Kriyas HaTorah and talk at times of davening when it's completely asur to, and he felt that perhaps that the blame could be on that. And while I was there a few years ago, I remember being told as well that the Beis Yisrael suggested something that we could never, ever even dream of suggesting. But the Beis Yisrael, the Gerer Rebbe, had the plates to say it, the shoulders to say it. And he said that perhaps the reason why Sfaradim were spared a lot of the atrocities of the Holocaust, of what happened in Europe, was because of their Kedushas Beis HaKnesses. And the truth is, you see this with traditional Sephardim as well. There's something to learn from them in their Kedusha Beis HaKnesses, from top to bottom. And the Kedusha Beis HaKnesses is something we can all work on. Again, obviously talking in shul is something which always needs working on as poshut. But I'd just like to mention one chizuk that perhaps we can work on, which I've mentioned many times in the past. And the reason why I've mentioned it many times in the past is because it's something which constantly requires a chizuk, but I think it's such an easy thing to do. And again, another reason why I'm mentioning it is because I've had feedback from people who have made changes in this area which I'm about to talk about, and they've felt the changes tremendously. And that's regarding phones in shul. And I'd just like to, for a second, just contrast talking in shul versus phones in shul. Talking in shul, we all know, it's not great. It's something which needs to be worked on. And we've got to mechazik ourselves on it. But to speak quite frankly, someone that talks in shul to a neighbour, at least it shows he's at home in shul. He shouldn't be doing it. It's wrong. Perhaps he should be told to be quiet. But a person who's sitting in shul during davening and takes out his phone, he is sending a message to himself, but even worse, to everyone around him: I don't want to be here. I don't want to be here. I have to be here. Okay, I'll be here. So I'll find. So I'm not going to waste my time, Chas Hashanah, being here. I'll make sure to go through my work emails. Okay, once my work's done, okay, I'm bored, so I'll go through social media. Now, I'm talking about extremes over here. But unfortunately, this is an area that people still slip up in. I personally, and I'll tell you, you'll see in a second why I'm saying this, I personally don't bring my phone into shul at all. I started doing this a few years ago after one of the misbalim in shul told me, and I was able to relate to this, he told me that while he has his phone in shul, he feels constantly this need to look at it. That means whenever there's sort of like a moment, sort of the end of Shemoneh Esther, takes 3 steps back, and the Shliach Tzev hasn't started yet, he's got this feeling, I need to check my messages. Now, of course he won't. We're talking about Bnei Eliyahu over here. We're not talking about people that are actually going to do that. Of course he won't. But he feels tethered, he feels connected. And he wants it to be that when he's in shul, that's it, completely shut off. So this particular mispallel of our shul, Tommy hasn't brought his phone in now for about 5 years. It hasn't entered into the building for 5 years. That's Kedushas Beis HaKnesses. That's wanting to be here. That's making a statement. That's like going into a date and saying, I've not just turned off my phone, I've left my phone elsewhere. I'm present. Present. So the reason why it's such an easy thing to do is because, again, I'm going to contrast it with talking. Talking needs chizuk, but it's something which needs chizuk the whole time. Needs chizuk the whole time. If you've got someone next to you and you know that there's something interesting to share with them quickly, every single day you have to think about that. But phones is something which is one decision. It's one decision. I'm not going to bring my phone into shul. If I bring my car to shul, it's very, very easy. Take out my phone before going into shul. I'm putting it on the seat in the car. Decision's done. Sometimes tasks which make a big difference to our life are so simple. And it can be done. But again, I want to bring out the point that people that do take out the phone, again, I'm not emails and what on social media, of course no one's doing that here. But I'm talking about even just the person taking out the phone for a second just to check a message. It sends such a terrible, terrible message to everyone around them. We've been here, we want to come to shul, we want to connect, we want to have a kedusha space that connects us. It's a responsibility of all of us to ensure that we have that. And like I said, what you see in this kinah is the more kedusha that we attribute to the shul, the more kedusha that we treat the shul with, the more our kedusha baruch reciprocates. That means the koyach of our tefillah is going to be much greater if we treat the kedusha, we treat the base knessas with the kedusha that it deserves. Because the kedusha baruch will then add more kedusha to it. And that's the message you see, perhaps, from this kinah describing what Titus did and contrasting it with the effect that Nadan Avihu had when they went into the base of Mikdash and they were consumed with beish. So let's read this kinah together. Kinah Tes Zayin, page 226. זכויר אשר עושה צער בפנים שולח חרבו יבוא לפניים ולפנים נחלסינו בעיס קצימי לחם פונים וגידי פריחס בלשתי פונים יסרים עם גיר ומוגים אדום ומדי תקוב כמרי אדם דום מימינו דולח והשקיר חיצוב מדום כי עוצה מן הבייס וחרבו ימרי אדום על הגריס אבו יסגובה ונוצא אל ידינו מולי לגבר מצרים וכל לאויים עם בו גובר אני בסי חיווי אורץ אילו אורץ אילו בצבור אבל סינו זו רק הכניסו וחורו כף לא איש וזה זוינו צויו הכניס לא נכבו בו איש Thank you.